مرحبا, شالوم, and welcome to another episode by the Ropescast, the only alternative view of the Middle East. Hello, shalom, ومرحبا.
Hi, this is Ksenia Svitlova.
And I am Ibrahim Abu Ahmed.
And you are tuning to the Ropescast, the Rope's original and unique podcast where we provide our listeners with a new and different view concerning the challenges and opportunities on the path toward regional cooperation and the end of Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
And also on the role of the region in order to reach this end and a new era for the Middle East.
But first of all, what is ROPES? For those who do not know what ROPES is, ROPES is the Regional Organization for Peace, Economics and Security. It is a people-to-people organization that works to lay the foundation for a post-conflict Middle East by connecting Israeli, Palestinian and Arab regional leaders to meet shared challenges and opportunities, inspired by both Arab peace initiatives and Abraham agreements. ROPES is committed to the vision of a peaceful, tolerant and integrated Middle East in which all Arab countries enjoy cooperative relations with the State of Israel and a prosperous, well-governed and territorially viable State of Palestine. So Ibrahim, please tell us a few words about yourself.
So I'm Ibrahim Abu Ahmed. I'm the Director of Alumni Relations and the Tourism Project here at ROPES. I'm originally from Nazareth in Israel. I'm an Arab, Palestinian, and Israeli citizen. I believe my identity is all of the above and not either or. And I am here to shed a light about a new vision and a new way that we can all move forward as citizens of Israel, Palestinian people, and basically taking this region forward. It's something I personally believe in on a personal level. And all my career has been basically going towards that vision, studying international relations and national security studies.
You lived in Egypt, is it right?
And I lived in Egypt, so
wow.
Which actually is the one thing that made me decide that this is the path I want to take. I went to Egypt, wanted to study psychology, of all things. That's why my mom wanted.
And I think in the Middle East, you know, it's very smart, both psychology and psychiatry. I think the region needs a lot of those experts.
And it's something that typically hasn't been a field that is also very present. And even I was the only guy in most of my classes. But then I was in Egypt and I was there in 2011. So I saw the Egyptian revolution with my own eyes. I saw the million people of Tahrir Square. And seeing that basically showed me the power and impact that people can have on their own life and the ability to make a change. And that's when I think the switch happened and I decided that this is what I want to do. I believe in change. I believe in the people's ability to make change, and I wanted to be a part of that.
Amazing. So listen, Ibrahim, you know that we could actually meet with you on Tahrir Square because I was there too as a reporter. I was working at the time on the Israeli television channel in Russian language, Channel 9, and I was sent to Tahrir Square to report on the dramatic events of the Egyptian revolution. I was there also a couple of years later to see the second revolution against the Islamist president Mohamed Morsi. My background is journalism. This is something that I dreamt to do since my, you know, maybe 8 or 9 years old. I grew up in Moscow and I grew up in the era of perestroika, this very special time in the former Soviet Union when things changed, when the old order collapsed, and when the wind of freedom blew through the whole country, through the whole region. So I decided I want to be a journalist. When I was 14, we moved to Israel with my family. I grew up in Jerusalem and I studied in the Hebrew University in Jerusalem. Yes, because my mother wanted me to. This was explicitly her will.
Well, our moms want.
Yes, yes, we do what our moms want. We are good kids.
But let me ask you this. As somebody who came from Russia and moved to Israel, and you were interested in journalism, I mean, you know.
And Middle East, always.
So stereotypically, the perception would be that maybe you would want to study something that has to do with Russian politics, and not the Middle East of all things. What drew you as a Russian person who came all the way to Israel to focus on the Middle East and learn Arabic. For those who don't know and listening right now, Ksenia is almost fluent in Arabic, something that is admirable. Coming here and you have to first study Hebrew and then doing that and Arabic together. What drew you to that?
Well, you know, I think it was the realization that I will be living in the Middle East. And the lingua franca on the Middle East, the most common, the most spread language here is Arabic. And actually, it's a funny story. But when I decided to study Middle Eastern studies, along with journalism in the Hebrew U, a girl at the registration tried to dissuade me from this. And she told me exactly that. Why don't you study something that, you know, you, the newcomers from Russia are good at? I asked her, what is that? And she told me, well, you know, nuclear physics. Oh. I'm like, oh my God, I'm shaking now because I'm very bad at math. Sorry, mom. And it was you know, a miracle that I did my exams, the final exams on math. But I like languages and I like culture. And I look around in the map of the Middle East and Israel is surrounded by Arab countries, not by France and Spain and Great Britain. We have Lebanon and Syria and Jordan and Egypt and the Palestinians that hopefully one day it will become an independent state. All of that, it made me think that this is a smart choice. And actually, you know what? It's the best choice that I've done in my whole life to study Middle Eastern studies and Arabic language.
I mean, if we look especially now about the Abraham Accords and the new relations that Israel is trying to create with the Arab world, it's almost absurd that Arabic is still not an official language here in Israel.
It was.
So do you want to tell us a little bit more about that and about your attempt to make also studying Arabic in Jewish schools mandatory?
Well, after spending almost 15 years in covering the Middle East, being a very active journalist, traveling to not only Palestinian territories, but also many Arab countries, among them also Libya and Syria, Lebanon, and so on. In 2015, surprisingly, I was elected to the Knesset. And I became a member of the parliament.
Surprisingly, she's just a badass and she doesn't want to say it, but sure.
So among other things that were important to me, such as the strive for the two-state solution and the advancement of peaceful relations with all of our neighbors, whether it's Arab countries in total or the Palestinians, me as well as me, along with other Knesset members of different parties, the Likud party, that was the governing party at the time, the Labour, the Arab parties, the religious party of Shas, we promoted a legislation that would make study of Arab language in Israel mandatory in schools, starting from first grade. Because, well, you know, again, coming back to our surrounding, not only that we live in the Middle East and we are surrounded by Arab countries, but also 20% of Israeli population and Arab speakers.
Here too.
And if you are looking actually at the Jewish population, then you find there what, like 50% of Jews who came from Arab-speaking countries. And it's their culture too. You know, the Tunisian Jews, the Iraqi, the Moroccans. I mean, people still speak Arabic language or specific dialect of the Arabic language that they used to speak. So I just thought that it's smart. Unfortunately,
so what happened?
This legislation, it passed the preliminary reading and then it was buried in the committee. I unfortunately do not see any chance for this bill to be promoted right now.
Why don't you think, you know, maybe that's right now is the right time? We're having the Abraham Accords. Israel wants to open to the Arab world. Why is it still being buried? Who's keeping it?
Yeah, so you have to have a political will, like just for everything, you know, to battle the inequality, social inequality and economic inequality, to introduce this reality that Israel, it's not a European country, I'm sorry. We are living here in the region the weather, the climate, the culture, everything around here, it's distinctly unique to the Middle East. So you have to adapt to this reality, I believe. And especially now when Israel is growing and promoting its relations with the Arab world, I mean, come on. Yes, of course, you can converse with people in English language. People actually know English very well in Abraham Accord countries. But I'm just thinking, what role could play the Arab-speaking Israelis? whether the Arab Palestinian Israelis, the Israeli citizens of Arab origin, or whether that's the Eastern Jews or people like me who studied it because they just want to. And, you know, I remember one of the sentences that I was struggling on my second year in the university. So we studied the alphabet during the first year, and it's tough. And for anybody who wants to study it, it's tough, it's difficult. When we already started to get the grip of the language, our teacher started to explain to us how rich and how beautiful is Arabic. And then he said that for any Arabic speaker, if you will say to him, "Allah al-Arabiya, hi al-lughat al-natikin bil-dad," it's the language of those who say dad, which is the letter that exists only in Arabic.
Exactly.
And I was like, I could not say this letter. my throat is not built this way. But eventually, you know, it got, you know, I did it. And I'm absolutely confident. My twins, they are almost 14 now. They are studying Arabic in school. And I know that, you know, there are so many Arabs that I meet who today in Morocco, in Egypt, also in the Gulf, who study Hebrew. And they're interested in Israeli
That's
culture.
Starting right now, yes? Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I've been always advocating and discussing about that. And then I met you and you told me about the legislation. And then I was like, finally, somebody who understands what I mean when I'm talking all this time. Because, you know, especially when we're looking at here, we're living here together, even before we start to look at the Abraham Accords and the Arab world, 20%, like you said, of the population is from my community, Arabs. Every fifth person in Israel speaks Arabic. And it always seemed absurd to me that I had to study Hebrew from first grade to 12, like you said. And it's always consistent. And it wasn't the case for Jewish Israeli schools. And I always made the joke that, you know, if an Arab kid can learn Arabic, Hebrew, and English from first grade, he is not smarter than a Jewish kid. If we can do it, Jewish kids can do it too. And language is not just a language. It's culture, it's mindset, it's perspective. It's the way that people think and their rationale. You get to understand people by their language. Otherwise, it's not the same. You know, I was exposed to Hebrew very early on, even before elementary school. And you watch the kids' channel in Hebrew because the shows were just a little bit quicker of the pace. So I wanted to know what happens. So I learned Hebrew. But then it's not only about the cartoon. Then you have, you know, clips about the holidays, about certain things about the Jewish people as a people, about Holocaust. And you learn that through educational, but also very light material that makes you understand the mindset of the people. And hopefully we can revive this legislation and one day,
Inshallah,
somebody will realize.
Do you want a funny story? Years ago, I met a guy in Egypt who spoke decent Hebrew. He told me that he studied Hebrew in the Cairo University in the Department for Israeli Studies. And this department, actually, I don't know if they have it today, but at that time they had a football team that was called the Mossad.
What? I have never heard of that one.
Yes, as I was laughing in the beginning and then not so much laughing. Yes. So, Ibrahim, what will we do in the podcast?
So, on our podcast,
who will we meet?
Each week we're gonna, or in each episode, we're gonna host one speaker who is going to give us different perspective about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, Abraham Accords, the influence of the region now that we have these relations. How is the region, what role can the region play in prospering real discussions, real negotiations between the Israelis and Palestinians, and what is basically our path towards a post-conflict Middle East? And each time we're going to have a speaker that comes from a different background, different country, and different also perspective and education. So we're going to have speakers from the Arab world, regional Arabs, Israeli citizens, Jewish
emerging
ones,
leaders.
Palestinian ones, Palestinians abroad and here, as well as Americans and Europeans. And we're going to hear all the different voices and all the different sides so we can have a complete image, basically, of what it is that we need in order to reach this dream of a post-conflict Middle East.
I have to tell you, frankly, that I was dreaming to produce such a podcast for years, to bring the huge variety of voices that exist in the Middle East. Because you know how it is. The media, of course, always brings out the most negative, radical, and dangerous aspects of life here in the region. Not only in the region here. It's the nature of the news. What can
it
you do?
It wants to sell itself with...
Yes, and we understand it well. But at the same time, you and I, we know a little bit more beyond what is shown in the frame of the news camera. I know it very well as a journalist myself. I know that in any given day, if I would bring to my editor a story about Imam in somewhere, Karachi, let's say, yes, who is calling for peace and coexistence, it would not make a story. If I would bring a story about Imam, a real story, yes, about somebody who is calling for extermination, let's say, of all Jews, yes, this is a story.
Definitely on the
but,
news.
But, you know, how many are from the first group and how many are from the second group? If you are watching the news, you know, even the most balanced, even the most professional news, still you will have this kind of image that the world is basically a very dangerous place to live in. And the hope is very scarce. And what we want to do is, of course, not to, you know, explain to you that the Middle East is the rose garden and a heaven on earth. We are still very, very far away from that. But that Middle East also presents different voices, that there are people who want coexistence in every single place, in Gaza, in Bahrain, in Lebanon, and in Kuwait, and in every single country, of course, in Israel. There are people who are interested in the end of conflict, just solution, and basically, prosperity and success for all of us. It's exactly 20 years of the war in Iraq, which I covered. It was my big first big story at the time. And I was traveling to Bahrain, and I met a Shia guy from Iraq who was a dissident who was living in Bahrain for a long while. And when he learned that I'm from Israel, I was a little bit afraid, you know, because Bahrain it's not an enemy country, definitely. It was still before the official relations.
20 years ago.
But still, you know, I was feeling a little bit, edgy. And he told me, listen, it's about time that we will stop the war and let's begin the trade. Let's begin selling stuff to each other. You know, I was like, this is the smartest sentence that I've ever heard, I think, from anybody here in the region. So this is our mission. This is our mission, to bring these voices, to underline them, to explain who they are, to ask them the difficult questions, because you cannot sustain this region only on optimism. You have to have a plan. And that's why we are here. That's why we are doing what we are doing in Ropes. And that's why we are producing this new podcast.
And I think you really hit the nail with one word, is hope. And I think this is part of the problem that we're facing today. Even when we look inside Israel and Palestine, hope is scarce. Hope is almost non-existent, unfortunately. Even the word peace is somewhat of a taboo these days. And I think our first step, like any NGO or any people-to-people work that exists, is to first start with restoring that hope. That it's possible. Because right now, people think that it's not even possible, so why even try? And we need to work first on that. It is possible. We have the ability to do something. We are a generation who lives in this reality. And frankly, we're sick of this reality, particularly when we're looking at Israelis and Palestinians. Our status quo is becoming unbearable. And we are desperate for a change.
Well, you know, I think that something happened during the last few years that actually gives a little bit of hope. The Abraham Accords, I know that, there are some circles, of course, express criticism against it, especially in Palestinian autonomy. And nevertheless, I believe that every peace agreement, every peace accord, every normalization agreement, it's a chance for a better life. We believe in Ropes that Abraham Accords has to absorb also the Palestinians. It has to benefit also with the Palestinians. And it's about time to think, how can the whole region work for the integration and the translation of these ideas of prosperity and peaceful coexistence in the future. So this is something that personally gives me hope. And that's why we are starting this new podcast. The word hope that we said time and again, tikva in Hebrew, and
Amal,
it's very important. So we invite you to join our podcast. You, of course, can subscribe on any of the podcast platforms that you are using. We are existing on every one of them. You can read more about us in ropes.org, our website. And if you want to connect with us, if you want to perhaps participate in our podcast, then you can write to the mail info@ropes.org.
And thank you again for being with us today on the Ropes Cast, and we hope to see you soon. Stay tuned.
I just want to remind that there are more interesting and fascinating episodes at of Ropecast, and you can find everything and of course subscribe at your favorite podcast platform wherever you are listening to it. And if you want to seek more information about our organizations, we advise you to go to the website ropes.org. And if you want to become a guest at our podcast one day, there is an email. Please write it down, info@ropes.org.
Thank you, shukran, ve toda rabah for all of you for listening to us today. And we hope to have you on our next episode here at the Ropes Cast. Stay tuned.